The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So my deep commitment to mindfulness was really challenged this evening on the way here. And I was so grateful that you were here because it allowed me to become more mindful as I came into the room, and it was a very precious moment to, to arrive. I had mentioned to the center earlier that the Donna for this evening, please donate it back to the center. They're doing such good work here, and I really want to support them to establish this center. So my offering, whatever you would offer to me, is going back to the center this evening. It's interesting. I was thinking a lot about mindfulness. I've had a lot of different experience of mindfulness, and I was thinking if I was going to share some of the most important things that have made an impact on my life and practice that would be of benefit possibly for you in coming here this evening, what would I want to share? And I'll start with a story. A number of years ago, 20-some-odd years ago, I was at a retreat center, and this was way up in the Redwoods, and there was a wonderful teacher coming from India, and it was his first time in America, and all of the retreat people, the people who'd been studying for many, many years, done a lot of Dharma practice, done substantial retreat, had cleaned the center and prepared and organized and got the word out, and so it was a very big deal to welcome the teacher. And he was going to spend 3 days teaching on mindfulness. And in the Tibetan tradition, which is I call it the Rococo of Buddhism, we have everything you would ever want in Tibetan Buddhism. We don't leave anything out. You know, the bells, the whistles, the drums, the incense, the pretty pictures, the dances, we put it all in there. So it's a very rich tradition, and as with all of Buddhism, in all traditions, mindfulness is the foundation. Mindfulness is the place that you start with that provides the solid base. And so here was a group of very, very experienced Vajrayana practitioners who had done a lot of practice, and they were really kind of feeling proud, you know, to welcome this very high lama into their center to teach them about mindfulness, because they knew all about mindfulness. And it was one of my first times at the center, so I was kind of watching this whole thing unfold. And he took the seat, and he says, well, he could talk for a little while about mindfulness, and he says, well, let's just try to practice a little bit. And so everybody got real settled in on their cushions and fixed their little seats and carved out their little meditation turf, as meditators like to do, and settled in. And he said, well, let's just start slowly. Let's just try to sit for 15 minutes. And people were kind of looking around the room like, are you kidding? I can do that in a heartbeat. You can sort of see the little wheels clicking like, oh, I've done so much retreat. I know all about mindfulness. So we sat in silence for 15 minutes, and then he cleared his throat, and everybody kind of opened their eyes and looked around. He says, okay, don't be discouraged. That wasn't too bad. It's really tough. Mindfulness, it's really tough. You know, don't be discouraged. So he talked for a little while longer. He says, okay, let's try it again. Let's try it. Let's try 10 minutes. Let's see how you do. So they thought, well, what's going on here? I'm slipping here. So people sat up and focused in and closed their eyes, and 10 minutes passed in silence. And he cleared his throat again. And he kind of rocked, and he said, well, it's really good to start somewhere. It's really good. And, you know, I really appreciate all the effort you're putting into this. This is really, really good. And, you know, this takes years and years of practice, so don't be discouraged. And by then, people are looking around going, my, what's going on? What are we missing here? So he talks for a little while longer, and he says, okay, let's try it for 5 minutes this time. It's 5 minutes. It's not too long. 5 minutes. But don't worry. Don't worry. If you can't do it, not to worry. So people thought, well, I can do five, at least 5 minutes. So the entire room is a big room full of people, very crowded, sat down for 5 minutes. And at the end, he cleared his throat and he said, you know, in Tibet, we start with a minute at a time. Let's start there. So it was a really interesting moment for me, because what I realized is so often in the West, we want to do it, and we want to do it right, and we want to assume the pose, and we want to have the accoutrements, and we want to have it all figured out. But the real practice starts in just little tiny steps. And just as when we learn to walk, we have to take, you know, a step at a time, meditation practice is like that as well. And even for experienced practitioners stuck in rush hour traffic who forgot to get gas and bridge toll and needed to thought, okay, where is my mindfulness right now, you know? And there's always an opportunity to practice every moment of every day. And it was very interesting, because I thought about him many, many years, and I didn't know this teacher's name. I knew his title, Tibetan practitioners. We have a lot on venerable this or holiness that or Rinpoche that. But the teaching really stayed with me, of what it means to lay a foundation. And over the years, I've seen the benefit of you start slowly, slowly, a minute at a time, and you begin to know that you can do a minute, and then you might expand it to three, where you're fully aware in those 3 minutes, and your mind doesn't wander here or there, but to be fully, fully present, and not in a forced way, or not in a sleepy way, where we can sometimes be mindful, but we're kind of nodding off a little bit, but in a very, very gentle, fully cognizant way to be present. And then slowly we expand it to 5, and then 10, and then 15. And that begins to set the foundation. And we're always setting the foundation every day. Every day we sit down. Every day is a different day and a new day with new things that come up. So each day we sit, there's always an opportunity to do it again. We always get a chance for a do-over, and that's the beauty of meditation. It's not as though you progress always in a straightforward line. Sometimes you go forwards, and people who've been meditating for a long time, sometimes you go way, way back before you go forwards again. Sometimes you go in circuitous routes. It's a real practice and a real commitment. And so that was one of the first stories that I thought of that really, really impressed me, because it also gave a lot of permission that some days it's just not coming together. The meditation, there's, you know, things going on within the mind, there's places to go, people to see, to-do lists, we all have them. And yet it's like, well, maybe I don't have 20 minutes in me, but can I really, really sit mindfully for 5 today? And maybe those 5 minutes expand, or maybe they give just enough to carry the practice forward in the rest of the day. So that was one of the first real important impressions for me about what is practice in terms of a gradual step. And I thought, you know, it's just like exercise. And when you want to exercise and you want to get your tone, you don't go out immediately and start running the 5K race. You do some stretches. You do some things so you don't injure yourself. You start off slowly, slowly, and you build your stamina, and you build your concentration, and you begin to find your route, and you find your pace. And after you begin to develop this routine, then you begin to expand it, and you get more muscle tone. You find your flow, you get into a stride. And meditation is very similar. We don't always, I think in this culture, we're not always aware of how our consciousness is a muscle that we actually do exercise every day. That there's different ways you can exercise it. For example, we exercise it by the thoughts that we have running through our mind throughout the day while we're at work. You know, oh, that person gave me that deadline. Oh, I don't have time for that. What is she wearing that to work? She shouldn't be dressed that way, you know. Oh, I can't believe my boss spoke to me in that tone of voice again. We always have this internal dialogue going on and on, which is where our consciousness is. It's where our mind is living at the moment. And when you do a mindfulness practice on your meditation seat, that's the foundation that you begin to create so that when you get off your meditation seat and you begin to walk out and engage with the world, with your friends and family and coworkers and community, that you can take some of that awareness with you in your interactions. And why would we want to do that? Well, when we're more mindful, we're at choice. If we're caught up in the emotions of a situation, if we're caught up in the thoughts or judgments or our criticality or feeling like we're not enough, whatever that internal dialogue is that we often have going on, it actually takes us out of the present moment. And when we're not in the present moment, we're not fully engaged with the person or the situation. And if we're not fully engaged with the person or the situation, we're not going to bring forward all of who we are in the moment. We're going to bring forward our thoughts, our reactions, different feelings that we might have that might not even bear on the situation. We're not fully present to who is in front of us or how we're really being touched and moved. And so the foundation for the mindfulness practice we do on our seat is to then take that into another level and to begin to practice that awareness, not from sort of zombie disassociation way, like, oh, I'm being mindfully aware of my conversation with you. You know, nobody wants to engage with the zombie. You just don't feel that connection, you know. But you want to be present. You want to be yourself, and you want to be aware. How am I feeling in this moment? Am I aware of my breath? Am I aware of this person opposite me? What is really being triggered? Am I fully listening if I'm being triggered? Can I put that aside? Can I be fully present again? And so you have the opportunity to, each time you drift away, to then bring yourself back in the interaction. Each time you start to go off or become distracted or judgment arises or opinions arise or emotions arise to say, but I'm not fully present in this moment with this person. So you just have the opportunity to keep bringing yourself back to the present moment. All the traditions of Buddhism have mindfulness within their practices. And mindfulness in many ways is, I think, a practice that's probably within all major spiritual traditions. And we talk about it as, in the Tibetan tradition, we talk about it as mind training or lojong. And and the purpose of the mind training is to not only start to become aware of where is my mind in any given moment, but how to begin to make new choices. For example, if I'm a person who gets very irritated and very angry all the time, then the antidote to that would be to cultivate more patience. That's an antidote. So, for example, if being in rush hour traffic and hitting 19th Avenue and the streetlights aren't timed and I'm hitting every single stoplight, it's really an amazing practice to stop and say, where am I in this moment? I'm really irritated. okay, I can go now. Can I move forward and find that peace? And the next time I'm stopped, what is the choice I'm going to make about my irritation? Because there's always a choice in where we lose our mindfulness. We can allow our mindfulness to slip away from us, and we can always allow it ourselves to choose to bring it back again. There was another story that I had thought of and that I wanted to share with you, and this was a story that also deeply, deeply impressed me. This was maybe about 10 years ago in Los Angeles. His Holiness the Dalai Lama was invited to give a talk, and at the end of the talks, he sometimes invites the audience to write questions on a piece of paper, and they put it in a basket, and somebody sorts through them and gives it to him to read and answer for the audience. So he was, it was about 3,000 or 4,000 people in this huge auditorium, and he was in the middle of this auditorium seated, and he's picking questions out, and he picked one out and he read it in English because he speaks fairly good English. And he said, "What is the fastest way to enlightenment?" And everybody laughed. And everybody, you know, people just thought, "Oh, this is so funny," you know. And he was, when His Holiness laughs, he shakes. He kind of jiggles up and down. His whole body gets into it. And so he was kind of like this. And the audience was roaring with laughter. It just was one of those moments. And I looked around the room, and the Tibetans were like this. They were looking at the floor, kind of with their heads down, and their hands folded in their lap, and very, very quiet. And I thought, wow, what are we missing? And suddenly, we realized that His Holiness was crying. And in that moment, the entire room was, there's like a collective gasp of, oh my God, you know, and for Tibetans to see a Dalai Lama cry is, it really takes them to the core of their being, of recognition of what it is they have done, what is the impact of what they have done. And I talked to somebody afterwards about it, and he said a Tibetan would never ask that question. And it was interesting because His Holiness said, you know, enlightenment is not easy. We want it to be easy. And he said, I'm crying because, you know, of course we all want release from our suffering, and we all want the quick fix, and we all want peace, and we all want happiness, and we all want compassion, and we want it to all come together, but it's real effort. It's a real commitment. And the good news is that there's plenty of time to do it. Because if we really had one lifetime to do it in, where would we fit it in with everything else that we're doing between raising families and getting educations and paying off mortgages? And so there's an opportunity to learn to practice in a way that's realistic within this lifetime. So I thought about those two stories, and I thought it's interesting because both of them, in a certain sense, gave a lot of permission that it's okay to not know everything right out the gate. You don't need to get fully enlightened. You don't need to have mindfulness down like that in one lifetime. There's an opportunity to build a really solid, solid foundation. So, get a drink here. We go till 9 o'clock, right? Okay. One of the things that I wanted to do this evening was to do a guided practice on working with emotions, emotional states, and mindfulness for you to have the experience of what it's like outside in the world every day, but to begin to incorporate mindfulness in your daily practice. And again, the reason to do this is to begin to familiarize ourselves with those moments when we're swept away in the heat of the moment. And sometimes it's easier to bring ourselves back when we're seated on the cushion, but it's not so easy to do it in the midst of a discussion with a friend, or maybe an altercation with somebody in a line at the bank, or in the midst of being cut off and full of traffic. So what I'd like to do is to do a guided meditation practice on mindfulness in this moment. So if you could get comfortable again. And this may or may not be familiar to some of you to have a guided meditation. And so what it is that as you go into meditation, I'm going to guide you into different states, and then I will bring you back to this moment now with mindfulness. And as you go into these places that I'll guide you into, I'll ask you to pay attention to sensations in your body, thoughts that may be arising. What are you noticing in this moment? So the more that you practice going away and coming back, especially with an intense experience, then you'll begin to familiarize yourself with that as you go out into the world as well. It's an opportunity. So I'd like you to get as comfortable as you can and close your eyes for this. And can everybody hear me okay? A nod will suffice. Okay, great. And I'd like you to first come back and feel your body, the sensations that are arising, feeling supported by your chair, or if you're on the floor, your cushion. And to notice the support beneath you, and then also if there's any tension or if you need to shift a little bit, to come into focus and relaxation, to just do that gently. And to focus on your breath. Your in and out breath, very, very gently and softly. And as you bring your awareness to your breath, your awareness should be as gentle and focused as if a butterfly was landing on your lapel, very, very gentle. And as you focus on your breath, I want you to think back to a recent situation where you were really triggered, very, very activated, irritated, maybe upset, could be with a person or a situation, and I want you to fully experience that in your body at this moment. And if you hear the words that were said or see the image of what really irritated you, to just watch that. Just watching from a place very gently, witnessing the scene. And as you experience the emotions that arise in the body and the intensity, just notice where they are. Are they hot or cold? Hard, soft, shaky. Do they move around or stay in one place? Remembering to breathe in and out. Very gently. And notice if there's a conversation going on in your mind. The words that are being said. Are they critical? Judgmental? Passionate? Remembering to breathe gently and just watch where you are. How uncomfortable they are. And look at where the mind is. Is it strategizing? Planning for the next thing to be said or done? Is it looping? Going in circles endlessly on what you could have said, should have done, or what they could have said or should have done. Remembering to breathe. Now come back to this moment, this room, this time, that moment is over, it's finished. Come back to the body, the sensations, and if your mind wanders back to the situation or conversation, come back to the in and out breath very gently and kindly. And as you follow your in and out breath, and awareness now, ask yourself this question, how will I do it differently next time? What choice will I make? If this ever happens again, and ask the question and just breathe in and out slowly and gently and wait and watch and notice what comes up. Come back to your breath in this moment, the in and out breathing, and your body, the sensations, the sounds in the room, cars going by. And when you're ready, open your eyes. There are so many, many teachings on mindfulness and so many books on mindfulness, and it's so easy to read them and relate to them because they make sense and they touch us. We resonate. We think, I want to do that. And the practice of doing it, sometimes in the real moment, in the heat of a challenging situation, is real warrior work. It's work that takes us into the core of who we are to show up differently in the present moment. And the opportunity that we have in those challenging moments is, if there's a window where we suddenly realize, I have been swept away and I'm in it, but if I can come back to this breath and this moment, I might have the opportunity to make a different choice in the situation. Maybe and maybe not, but the more that we practice, the more that we are gentle with ourselves in those moments when we are swept away, we can also extend gentleness to the people around us as well. And the more that we can accept our own humanity of being fully endowed with this wide, wide range of emotions that we don't want to shut down, we don't want to go numb, and we don't want to indulge them. We don't want to get so taken off track that we create train wrecks wherever we go in our emotional or relational lives. But the more that we can stay fully present and awake and aware, those are the moments we have an opportunity to have a different conversation or a different resolution or maybe unforeseen possibilities that we hadn't even considered. But because we did not go to the place of habitual pattern or habitual reactivity, we're able to entertain something new and different. So, having a guided meditation gives you an opportunity to sort of be the passenger going along into an experience. And what I'd like to encourage you to do in the next few days is, if you're out and you have a situation that comes up where you recognize, oh, I'm really in it right now, to think, okay, what was it that she said? And what I'd like to say is, if you can always come back to the breath and remember to focus on your breathing, because the good news is that when you're breathing and focused on your breathing, you're not time traveling to the past and you're not leaping forward to the future, because we can't breathe in the past and we can't breathe in the future. And we focus our mind on this present moment now, we're remembering that what has already occurred is over and done with, and there's nothing we can do about it. That situation is finished. But this new situation, if we're fully aware, we have an opportunity to bring more of ourselves to it. I know that we're getting ready to wind our evening down. And before we do questions and answers, I'm a person who's really big on resources, so I brought a bag of books with me. And because this is just a few of the things that are out there, but I wanted to let you know that if you want to learn more about sort of taking your meditation into a new place in terms of mind training, there's phenomenal resources out there in all the Buddhist traditions. So most of these that I have are from the Tibetan tradition. There's different schools in the Tibetan tradition. There's a really, really wonderful one by Thich Nhat Hanh called Understanding Our Mind. And you're all welcome to come up and flip through these at the end if you'd like. But I just wanted you to have resources if you're interested and you want to pursue this further. One of my favorites, because it has so many teaching stories in it, is the collected teachings of Ajahn Chah called Food for the Heart. And this is just beautiful, beautiful stories and anecdotes of meditators and meditation practices and learnings that they had from their interactions with a truly remarkable teacher that I wish I had met in this life. And this is also from the Theravada tradition. And the foreword is by Jack Kornfield with an introduction by Ajahn Amaro. Has he been here before? Yeah, he's wonderful. I really like him. And then in the Tibetan tradition, there's a wonderful book called The 7-Point Mind Training, or The Practice of Lojong, which is, Lojong means mind training. There's a wonderful book by His Holiness called Transforming the Mind, Teachings on Generating Compassion. And mindfulness has many, many branches. Compassion, loving kindness, equanimity, patience, perseverance. All of those are, you could think of them as extensions or applications of mindfulness, because they all require mindfulness in them. And then if you're scientifically bent, there's one called Destructive Emotions, How Can We Overcome Them? A Dialogue with the Dalai Lama. And this is narrated by Daniel Goleman. He's done a lot of wonderful, wonderful research on mindfulness. And there's a whole school of scientists and psychologists and neuroscientists and neurologists and quantum physicists who meet almost every year, I think, and they have a dialogue on the mind and emotions and reality, and to try to do some bridging work between different cultures and different understandings of who we are as human beings and how we can begin to eliminate suffering, not only for ourselves but for other people through these practices. And then one more called Train Your Mind, Change Your Brain. I think she got talked into this title. This is a wonderful, wonderful book by Sharon Bagley. And again, this is for somebody who's interested in sort of the scientific part of it. And then I'll do one or two last books here. There's one that was translated, His Holiness the Dalai Lama's translator, Thubten Jinpa, translated many, many traditional Tibetan texts from all the different schools in this lovely tome called Mind Training, The Great Collection. And if at some point you find you're really taken by the practices and you don't want to spend $20 or $30 for every single book that has been translated on these, you can buy one book that has all of them in it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful resource again. And you get a flavor for all the different schools and all the different practices and ways of applying this. And I think I'll stop there. There's more to go, but I want to make sure there's time for some questions and answers. So, So I'll leave these out here, actually. I'll put them somewhere. So, Maureen, did you want to, if anybody has questions? Anything about the practice or the guided meditation or... Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, where do you start if you're interested in teaching mindfulness?
If you're interested in teaching mindfulness, you mean like at a center?
Yes.
Yes. If this is something that you'd like to do, is to teach mindfulness, well, I think you could call up, some of the different centers around and talk to the teachers and, you know, establish a relationship and see if you can teach there.
But do you need to go to school or get some kind of certification?
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So in terms of teaching mindfulness, I think that within the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, because it's such a foundation of all the different practices, that at a certain point when people feel that they're ready to begin teaching it or somebody invites them to teach it, then, you know, you can go that route. I know that there are many courses that you can take or you can study with different lamas. You can study at a university. But it's not like you get a certificate that says, you're now mindfully aware. I'm so sorry to say, I certainly don't have one of those or moments where I'm really not mindful. So, yeah.
Just to be allowed to teach.
To be allowed to teach.
Mm-hmm. That was my question.
Yeah. I think that when you feel like you're ready to teach, you should teach. It's good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I think it's also to recognize that it's ongoing, as they say, practice, practice, practice. You know, all the teachers that I know, we're all practicing, you know, even as we're teaching. So it's good.
That was one of the reasons why I was interested in becoming a teacher.
Uh-huh.
Because I would never end.
Yeah.
I will always be.
That's right. Yeah, practice unfolds, especially it changes over the years. And the more that you practice, it begins to have, it's like marriage. You know, there's the day, and then there's the lifetime of the experience. And so practice is kind of like you have an opportunity every day to practice, but the meditation experience also changes over time because we change over time. And our situation changes over time as well. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Hi.
I had a question about outside noises. I'm having a difficult time concentrating and not being,
distracted?
Distracted,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And not just car noises,
mm-hmm.
You know, but other noises around the room. I really had a difficult time with that, like at my job,
mm-hmm.
concentrating,
uh-huh.
focusing at work and not being distracted, you know, and there was a situation when you did that guided meditation mm-hmm. that I thought of.
Yeah.
Because I was distracted and I reacted. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a good situation.
Yeah, yeah. That's great insight though, to recognize that oftentimes when we're triggered, there's maybe multiple things going on. And the trigger is kind of like the little tipping point that says enough already. So within the mindfulness meditation, one thing that you might try doing for a while in your practice is meditating on sound. You can always meditate on meditation on the body. You can meditation on the breath. You can also meditate on sound and being mindfully aware of the sound. And notice when you start to overlay something on the sound, like, oh, that irritating train that just went by. Oh, I can't believe that plane. My gosh, how will they ever hear me, my voice over the microphone, because that plane roared overhead. So notice what happens with the dialogue that gets overlaid on what's actually just a neutral event. It's just sound going by. And when you notice that, to just say, oh, irritation. And come back to the sound. And to very lightly, you don't want to force your attention on your meditation object, whether it's the breath or the body or sound. You want to just bring it back very, very gently. We don't want to wrestle with our minds. Our minds don't like to be wrestled with at all. They really get resistant. So we just want to kind of place it back where it needs to go. So I practice on your cushion at home for a while. And then periodically at work to just to track. Oh, there goes that train again. Oh, okay. And there's also this over here. To just be aware of it, but and to be aware of when the irritation arises, to begin to neutralize it. Oh, instead of, oh, that blank, blank train, say, oh, I'm just a little irritated. And just relax back into the breathing. Come back to the breath. The breath is such a wonderful, integrative, neutral place to come fully back into our body and to not only be present, but it softens everything a little bit. And to just try that practice first on your cushion and then to try it in little 5 minutes here and there at work and then see what happens. Yeah, with it. Yeah. Good. That's a good question, especially about sound. We often don't think about sound, but we're very sensitive to not only the ambient sound, but we always pay attention to tonality. How is that other person talking to me? You know, or how are we talking to them? We always register it, even though we don't really focus in on it. So thank you. It's a good question. Anybody else?
This kind of goes to the same issue.
Uh-huh.
So you might have already answered it, but my question was about when are you, like when thinking of an incident or the type of incident, my inclination is to avoid or remove myself from it.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like that is resisting it.
Right.
Instead of just noticing. So even
right.
If it's not a sound, but if it's someone who's driving crazy.
Right.
So well, then you have a safety issue, I guess. But,
right.
You know, removing myself from even being around mm-hmm. the thing that is irritating.
That's good tracking. That's really important. And I think that's a good question to ask, partly because in meditation, sometimes when we're really suffering with something, we want to turn it right off, you know, and a really good way to do that is to sort of disassociate from it. To remove ourselves from the reactivity of it or to just shut down our reactivity or remove ourselves from the thing that's reactive outside. And, again, we're taking ourselves out of the present moment. There's a judgment in there. There's a mental judgment of, I don't like this, this is bad, this is wrong, they're wrong, whatever. That is not staying fully present with what is actually just a situation and just an emotion arising. We place overlays on top of these things. So for example, tonight in the traffic going down 19th Avenue in the car, very irritated because they didn't change the timing of the lights. Come to a stop. Irritation. How can I be mindfulness in this moment of irritation? Focus on the breath and recognizing there's just this fine line between, ooh, that I could really stay with irritation until the light changes really easily, very, very easily. And we all have those moments of, ooh, I could really, really stay really quite in my pistivity here, really irritated. Or I could shift it a little bit and give myself a little breathing room. I could let the irritation go for the length of a light. I can always pick it up in the next light very easily. But maybe for this light, I'll give myself those 5 minutes that I haven't had all day to just breathe, just for 5 minutes. And then I can go and I can, oh, here's another opportunity to practice again. Hit the red light. Okay, really, really, really irritated. Unbelievably irritated. Endless, endless stories about irritation. Or, I have another 5 minutes here at this light. I could give myself 5 minutes to just not turn it off and not step out of my body or my irritation, but to say, I'd like to shift this and give myself a little bit of room here. I can always choose to go back and pick it up, or I can choose to be in this moment now. Because the irritation's really, really just in my mind. I'm just sitting in a car. There's just a light going on. So there's a there's these little windows that we can sometimes remember to see. Oh, there goes that window. I want to grab that window and step into it. And the more that we practice, the more that we begin to see those spaces, and we can expand them more and more. So then maybe the first test is this really irritating pattern of traffic lights. And then tomorrow it could be at the checkout stand with an interaction. So we begin to apply the practice in different situations. So does that kind of answer your question? Okay, good. Good. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Could you talk a little about working with slogans?
Working with slogans. Oh, let me pull up the book. Love this book. There's a wonderful book called Advice from a Spiritual Friend. And one of the things that is really interesting, when Buddhism came into Tibet, Tibet was an oral tradition culture, considered the red-faced barbarians of Asia. They were really terrified everybody because they were masters not only living nomadic life in incredible conditions, but they were also masters of trade and guerrilla warfare. There was little robber gangs that would travel everywhere. They had no education, no written language for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so when Buddhism came into Tibet, one of the Dharma kings at the time decided that in order to help teach people, one of the things they established is working with slogans or mnemonic devices. You know, like we have them too in our culture, like a stitch in time saves nine. You know, if you, try to think of some other ones, I'm sure somebody has one on the, a penny saved is a penny earned. That's a great one. I love that one too. See a penny, pick it up. All the day you'll have good luck. So every culture has these little sayings, and within those little sayings, there's always a little teaching. There's always a little message or a little story that if you take that little phrase, you can expand it further. So within the Tibetan tradition especially, they're very, very big on these little tiny slogans that often related culturally to where the nomads were. I think one of them is like, never place the load of an ox on the back of a zo. Which is one of my favorites. And a zo, I think, is like either the female ox or the female yak, I don't know. Anyway, what it has to do is oxen are very, very, very strong, very, very sturdy animals, and they're known to carry a lot of weight, and you can put a lot on top of them. But you would never want to take that load and put it somewhere else where it would crush the other person or crush the other being. So there's these little devices. And so, for example, if I'm, say I'm a business person, and I'm working with slogans, and my slogan of the day is don't take the load of an ox and put it on a zoe. And maybe I have this really high-powered person that I work with and they're out for the day and I have a deadline to meet and I want it done like now. But I'm going to choose the new secretary. That would be the zoe. We don't want to crush the zoe right out the gate. You know, we want to strengthen. So it's like, where do we place the appropriate load or the appropriate energy with the appropriate situation? So there's these little slogan devices you can work with on a daily basis, and say you pick one a day and then you work with that all day, and that's your practice. So that's a good question. Thank you. I think we have time for maybe one or two more burning questions before we wrap up. Yes.
So would you recommend creating guided meditation that you did, sort of a construct of reconnecting with an emotion that's previously happened and seeing and looking at it. Would you recommend kind of rolling your own, if you will, when you come about a situation, doesn't have to be a heated situation, but just a situation where you were lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you think back and to recreate in your mind when you're sitting to get the feel and flavor of that. So it seems like it's a by exposure and examination, mm-hmm. there's a recognition
mm-hmm.
for future.
I think so. I think it's kind of walking. The reason I wanted to do it as a guided meditation partly is to introduce you to that experience of I'm really in it and I can step out of it. I'm really in it and I can step out of it. I can always come back to the breath. The challenge with that is if you're just on your own is you really have to be pretty mindfully aware to recognize that I'm really in it and I'm going to choose now to come back to this moment. Because one of the things is sometimes we can get really in it and really just sit in it for a while. I think it's a good place to practice, to start on your cushion, or if, you know, you can practice throughout the day, you know, start slowly with people and situations. And it's really good to practice with situations where there's not as much of a trigger. For example, practice with a neutral situation first. Like maybe just waiting in the line at the grocery store and suddenly become aware of, oh, I could be mindfully breathing for a few minutes here. You know, and then begin to expand to other situations. I think that if you're going to practice, say you have a challenging day at work or something with the family, and there's always an opportunity to go back and sit on your cushion and to experience it and then come back to the present moment and then to ask yourself the question, in this present moment, what will I do next time? What is the choice I'll make to do differently? Otherwise, we could get caught up in looping again on the past. And, well, I want to revisit that conversation with you because I didn't like what you said and stuff. It's like, well, let's go back to this present moment and maybe tomorrow, what will I do differently in the situation? So that would be a good place to start. Good question. Thank you. Good. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I want to thank the Meditation Center for inviting me down here. And thank the traffic light gods for blessing my journey to arrive here. Thank you very much. And again, if you're curious or, want to write down any of these book titles or just want to flip through them, please feel free to come up. I'll be around for a few minutes. So thank you very much.